to my podcast series called Becoming a Sage. My name is Jan Fried, but you can call me Dr. Jan. I'm passionate about helping people get from where they are to where they want to be, particularly in the second half of life. Today I've selected Dr. Mary Catherine Bateson, writer and cultural anthropologist and daughter of Margaret Mead, as a person to interview because of her books Composing a Life and Composing a Further Life, The Age of Active Wisdom. For more information on Mary Catherine, please refer to her bio that's attached to this podcast. Well, let's get going, Mary Catherine. Welcome to the series.
Thank you.
We know we are living longer and many of us are living healthier lives. From reading your book on active wisdom, you call this new stage of life from 50 to about 75 the second adulthood and the stage of active wisdom. What does that mean, and can you translate the value of this stage for us?
Well, the first thing to say is that a number of scholars have laid out theories of stages of maturation in human lives. And early on in my career, I was a teaching assistant for Eric Erickson. And I started from his theory of the human life cycle. Now, his theory was developed in the 50s. And since then, there's been a substantial increase in longevity in the developed world. And I found, as I looked at his scheme, that it was very important to say to people that the change is not that old age has become longer, but that we have a new stage of active, engaged adulthood before old age. And nobody wants to think of taking the stereotype of aging that they learned 30 years ago, and attaching another 20 years to it.
Uh-huh.
But it is, I think, tremendously exciting to realize that we now have large numbers of people in not perfect health, but good health, active and engaged, many of whom have come to the end of a major life task. Their children have grown up, or they've retired from a particular appointment, and they have energy and curiosity and a desire to contribute. And that looks to me like a huge opportunity for the human race.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I definitely look at this phase as an opportunity. You say in your book, one of the lines, I went back to your book and I had underlined this statement, we're living longer, yet we are thinking shorter. Can you explain what that means and how can we start thinking longer maybe?
Well, when I say we're thinking shorter, it's obvious that people are making decisions really from quarter to quarter.
Mm-hmm.
The political clock runs faster. If you get yourself elected to Congress, you start campaigning for re-election the day after.
Mm-hmm.
Companies are buying and selling product lines and so on, and new models coming out, and we discard appliances at an ever faster rate. Marriages are getting shorter.
Yeah.
People are moving rapidly from place to place, setting up new homes.
Mm-hmm.
And plans are made, in terms of building roads or bridges or dealing with the infrastructure of urban communities,
That is so true.
Now, the question that I asked was, well, what determines how far ahead people think? Partly it's the news cycle, it's dealing with stuff coming at you day after day after day. But I figured one of the ways that people learn to think about the future is by having children in their lives whose futures they care about.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the same time that I felt it was important to give people some possible models or ideas of what they could do in later adulthood, I felt it was also important to think about how we can get people in later adulthood involved in the political process with a longer focus on the future. In other words, I have grandchildren. I hope they grow up and have rewarding and useful lives, and that they pass to their children a world that is as beautiful as this one.
Yeah, no, that's very good. I love your word composing, and when I read Composing a Life several years ago, the word composing helped me see that I had choices and I was combining options into really creating a life. When I read that book, my children were young, and so I was a working mother and having young children. Now we have other options as we think about the rest of our life and the legacy we can compose. And, you know, when you were talking about grandchildren, I was thinking about this legacy work, which is a really big part of saging. And since you continue to use the word composing, tell us what that means to you now.
Well, I think it means more to me as I go along. I chose the word because I was really distressed at the way people were talking about juggling. Now, juggling can be a fine art. I've seen professional jugglers making an art of juggling, but if you're like me, you know you're going to drop something.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it produces anxiety. Whereas the word composing, which we associate with the arts,
sure,
you can compose a variety of elements in a mosaic or a collage simultaneously to create something beautiful, or you can create a piece of music or a dance or a story with a lot of variation over time that makes sense. So it seemed to me that as people were taking on more complicated lives, going back, particularly women going back to school and wanting to combine career with child raising and marriage and so on,
mm-hmm.
That they needed a metaphor for what they were doing that reflected the need for creativity.
I love that, yeah.
And harmony.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of producing anxiety and pressure.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. You mentioned William Bridges in your book and his work on transitions, and he was one of the sages I interviewed a couple times for my book, Leading with Wisdom, Sage Advice from 100 Experts. What should we know about transitions to help us in the age of active wisdom?
Well, I think most people my age are aware. I mean, one of the things people say immediately is, what if the young people don't
Huh.
And my personal strategy as a grandmother has been to encourage my daughter and her two little boys to teach me. And as soon as we think of teaching as a two-way street, instead of the young should listen to the old, the young begin to listen a lot better.
That's a good strategy.
And of course, we do need to learn from the young because we are immigrants in the present. I wasn't born in this country. I was born in the America of 1939.
Yeah.
It was different in many ways. And if I want to understand the country I'm living in now, I would do well to listen to what kids can teach me.
Yeah, that's a great point. Very good. Wisdom is clearly one of my favorite words, and you talk about becoming wise beings. Can you describe a wise being? B-E-I-N-G.
Well, there's so many meanings to the word wisdom.
Sure.
But I believe that to be wise, you must continue to be curious.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I would say to people, when you stop learning, you stop living.
Mm-hmm.
Because learning is one of the most distinctive characteristics of our species.
Well, and I've read your book on learning. I don't remember the exact title, but continuing to learn, or?
Continue to learn.
Continue to learn, right, right. Mm-hmm.
Be curious. Listen to the young people. And mine your own past. That's mine as a gold miner. So often we get in a situation that we think, this is totally new and strange to me and I'm uncomfortable. But very often you have in your past an experience of either being in that situation before, you know, suddenly having to adjust to a new home or moving to a new city. You've done that.
Mm-hmm.
Or you've been with a friend who's been going through that and taken time to try and empathize with how they're dealing, you know, with a complicated change in their life, maybe a divorce or a bereavement or a new job, whatever. And we've all got a lot of experience that we don't visit very often, but that has clues in it for what we might want to do next.
Mm-hmm.
You get the results of one election. You remember back what people said in campaigns in previous election cycles of what relationship it had to what they did afterwards. And you remember that eventually they went away.
Right, exactly.
Things like that. And I think we can do a lot with memories from actual experience. Just thinking about what we heard. We get told so much
Mm-hmm.
And one day you remember it and it turns out to be useful. And one of the things that I've discovered is I'm still getting to know my parents. Now, they've both been dead for more than 10 years. But as I encounter new things in my own life, it triggers memories of what they said, oh, casually at some point years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that turns out to be useful. It's somewhere stored away.
Yeah.
Or what it triggers is an understanding of something they were experiencing that I was too young to understand at the time they were doing it.
Yeah.
So we have this kind of the companionship of teachers and parents and siblings and friends living and dead that we've learned from.
Mm-hmm.
And we can pull that up.
Well, I love that. That's really an interesting point about, well, the whole idea is continue to learn. And as I said, I love that phrase, you know, to become a wise being. Well, as we kind of get to the close here, I always like to ask people, what else should I have asked you that our listeners need to know? And, you know, particularly about becoming a sage, active wisdom. What else should have I asked that you think we need to know?
Need to know is that this is, I guess we all know the word, a moment of great danger in human history with climate change and strange things happening politically and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But that these extra years of later adulthood might turn out to be as important as human childhood. You know, we are the species that adapts by learning. Most species come pre-programmed. Horses are winning races when they're a year old.
Mm-hmm.
Rabbits are breeding within a couple of months. Okay? But we have this long, long dependent childhood. And that is the basis for our flexibility, that we are protected during a period when we learn what is appropriate in the environment into which we've been born.
Uh-huh.
And also hopefully acquire habits of learning that run through the entire lifetime. And it also, incidentally, is a period when we learn a lot about how to love and be loved.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike so many species many species never even meet their parents because their parents have left eggs somewhere. So I think this is extraordinarily important. And I think it's really like every major social change we've had during the 20th century, you know, civil rights, the women's movement, gay rights, each one of those involved unlearning, becoming conscious of stereotypes and getting rid of those stereotypes.
That's true. That's very true.
And now we have all, I see it in myself, I see it in my peers,
Uh-huh.
And we have to free ourselves of those. And instead realize that this is a moment of opportunity for more learning, of course.
Uh-huh.
For spiritual development, for new discoveries, for creativity, that may be really what we need to survive into the next century.
Wow, that's an excellent point. Well, I want to thank you for sharing your wisdom with us. And I like to close my podcast by saying, may the rest of life be the best of life.
That's a good quote. Thank you for it.
Thank you very much.